We are on election day. Here we are, First Things Podcast. Let's go first to the East Coast to get an update on what's happening in the field. Maggie Rittenhouse.
Oh, I think we want to go to Anita, Maine first. I'm in Minnesota.
That is not how it works when the correspondent gives you the authoritative voice.
Yes, sorry.
You know, it's one of those M states.
Okay, fine. Anita, Maine, go ahead.
Hi, everybody. Here I am in Portland, Maine. This is the second polling location where I'm observing. I started this morning at 7 a.m. St. Pius Church, just off the peninsula here in Portland. There was already about 150 people in line when I arrived, and the line never really got below 100 in the first 2 hours that I was at that particular polling station. And folks were saying they'd never seen showings like that. I mean, presidential election years, people come out, but you could tell some people had not dressed appropriately. They were thinking they were just going to waltz in, cast their ballot. Oh, no. Wind chill factor, very cold. It's dry, but it's cold. And so people were sharing coats. There were hand warmers happening. Everyone's cradling their hot drink. And I'm now over at Deering High School. There are going to be three locations I'm going to today. And as of the 9 a.m. count, there were 171 cast at St. Pius, where I started, and 162 here at Deering. And I'll be going to a third location in a couple hours.
Now, can we go to you, Maggie?
Yes, now it's me. Okay, so I am in Minnesota. I have been up since 5:15 because my son woke me up, / I couldn't sleep, and I have been at the polling location in Hopkins, which is about 10 miles west of Minneapolis, and I've been here since 6:30. I'm a poll challenger with the Democratic Party, which is called the DFL here. We had about, I guess it was probably about 80 people in line when we started. Two of the iPads were down for check-in, so that was a little bit of a challenge, and part of me being here is to report back to the DFL leadership of what is happening so that they can monitor and send people to bring food or help with any technology issues. But since then, it's finally started working. Everybody's been able to vote except one woman who's having issue because of her maiden name not being on her stuff. So we've been actually going back and forth and trying to find a way for her to vote. And that's what the DFL, their whole point for people being here is to be sure that every single person can cast their vote. And it was funny, the Republican poll challenger to my left, she was like, you know, they told me here I'm just as a deterrent. That was the exact word she used.
What?
And she said that to the election judge. And I'm like making a face under my mask. I was like, well, that's not what we were told. Anyway, so I'm excited to be on the right side of history today. And it's been good. And I think we're about 150 have voted so far. But they said it's a little chiller this year given so many people voted early.
Here in Maine, I am doing poll observation with the League of Women Voters Maine, one of our partners, Women Power, and they've just been tremendous setting us up. We've got all kinds of hotlines. I called earlier with an absentee ballot question that had been posed to me at St. Pius. They got back to me 2 hours later and said, hey, we noticed you called 2 hours ago. Did you get the information that you needed? And I'd called another person from the league. So they've just been great, and it's been super to be here.
What's the general feeling out there? How do people? What's their demeanor? Are they fired up? Or are they just like, fuck it, let's vote?
There was a lot of camaraderie. Like, we're in a fire station, and there was a lot of an older gentleman was rearranging the line in the most confusing way ever because we had only one iPad set up, but people were joking about it and kind of, you know, I don't know, they seemed to be doing their civic duty with joy, which was good.
Yeah, I have to agree. I was also impressed. I was working with another poll observer who's been doing it for years and years, and she was really excited to see how the number of folks that are wardens and poll workers, it's trending like younger. So you got more younger people getting involved and working very closely with the lines, helping people get accommodated. It was also, we we had a situation where there are rules in Maine around how far away you have to be if you're if you have any candidate swag on of any kind. And so there were a couple instances where we had to just engage with some folks that either had stuff on their masks that were actual candidates or had brought in cars with signs on them. And everyone was very accommodating. They were very friendly. The lines, because of the level of chill here, and when I'm saying chill, I mean temperature, not mood. It was a little bit more staid, but definitely people were impressed as they would walk up at the length of the line. There was something really inspiring about seeing so many people lined up and having the line really stay long and wrapped around the corner the entire 2 hours that I was there. And when the politicians were there, they were thrilled. They were so excited by the turnout. There was a lot of energy as candidates walked the line.
Well, we, we leave no stone unturned here at Common Power. And so we sent you out to Maine and out to Minnesota just to keep watch on the polls over there and to encourage people. We have correspondents stationed all over this country for today. We have folks in Pittsburgh and also in Bucks County, Philadelphia. By the way, get your parents out there to vote, Anita. You got it? Okay. Oh, yeah. And Rittenhouse, I don't know where your family lives, but they better be voting too.
They've all voted.
My parents' ballots went into Doylestown, the county seat, a couple days ago. I've got photo documentation. They'll happily send you copies.
I got a niece who moved to Charleston 2 months ago. So, you know, that's how strategic our family is. All right.
How are things feeling in the morning up in the upper left corner of the country?
Well, my hands are frozen right now. They're cold. And none of this little Maine or Minnesota, joking fake cold. It's like real cold here. It's like 45. Okay, it's like 45 degrees here or something. Okay.
Maritime climate. Come over here. Try dealing with the Northeast. You wouldn't last 5 minutes in your shorts.
You know, David his determination to walk every day. It's like the Republicans. It just reaches its logical conclusion where, like, it just dies. You know, he's just going to, like, get hypothermia, and then that'll be the end. That's great.
That's depressing.
It inspires the whole neighborhood.
He'll be a martyr.
Good morning, folks. Good morning,
it's
folks.
Great.
Good morning.
Oh, he's
make sure you
his...
vote for Biden and Harris. Hello. Sure.
He's greeting his community.
Absolutely. Hey, you with that MAGA hat on, take that off. Got that? All right. There's a lot of those in Seattle. Okay. That's what I'm out for.
Way to go, man. Clean up the streets.
Hey, we're going to let you, Anita and Maggie, go. So Charles and I can focus on a little bit more of a political thing because you're not allowed to actually really do anything political in your space today, right?
Correct. So we will be tuning back with you later. What's that? Go ahead, Charles.
I was going to say you're still handing out those tiny pieces of secret paper that I gave you to give to voters, right? No, you're not doing that? Sorry.
This is being recorded and is going on the internet. It seems wrong.
Oh, that's right. Oh, yeah, that's a joke.
Yeah, that's a joke. Okay.
The only little slips of paper I have say ACLU Maine, call this number.
That's
protect
good.
Your votes. Got
there
them on
go.
Speed
Way
dial
to go.
Today. That's I've got
in
them
all,
on
in all serious though, we're super proud of you. We're really, really, really proud of you. It's way better than anything we're doing today. We're just looking at TV and shit, you know.
So hey, we're all doing stuff today, all in our own ways. And I know Maggie and I will be tuning in with you all later as we move to the later half of today. And I texted the Mojos this morning. We decided to communicate almost exclusively through emojis today. We've got emojis just burning up the text thread.
Awesome.
And it's been great to be in touch with folks. I've been getting WhatsApp texts from Dubai, Hong Kong, Germany, Afghanistan. I mean, the world is watching. The world is watching. It just feels so exciting to think that this is, I love elections.
Yeah.
I love elections so much. I would stand out in the freezing cold all day for 14 hours. I can't wait. So we'll look forward to catching back up with the two of you in that gentle maritime climate of Seattle. Keep your hands nice.
Thank you, Paul.
Moisturize. Have a spa day. Eat a cheeseburger. We'll be out here. Soldiers forever, me and Maggie.
That's right. Okay, I'm going to run back in. You guys have check in later.
Thanks, Steve. Thanks for the tech support.
So today, Joe Biden is voting in Scranton, Pennsylvania. And on the way to vote, he went by the local union hall. And this seems only perfectly appropriate. And he delivered some remarks that sound exactly like what he said for the last year and a half. And so I want to go back to his opening campaign stop in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and play just one minute of a clip of how he understood where this election was going to be decided.
Let me tell you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Well, let me tell you why. Thank you. Let me tell you why I chose Pittsburgh to begin this effort. I believe that Pittsburgh and my native town of Scranton and my hometown of Wilmington and Claymont, they represent the cities and towns that make up hardworking middle-class Americans who are the backbone of this nation. That's not hyperbole. The backbone of this nation. I also came here because, quite frankly, folks, if I'm going to be able to beat Donald Trump in 2020, it's going to happen here. Yeah. It's going to happen here in Western Pennsylvania. With your help, we're going to be able to do that. Thank you.
When you look at campaigns and you assess their success or lack of it, it usually comes down to two criteria. One, do they have a message tailored to the moment? A message that resonates with where we're at as a country. And two, do they understand the electorate and who is going to be crucial? On both of these factors, the Biden campaign has proved to be on point directly. They've had a message about stability and the potential greatness of this country that has only gotten way off track under this president. And they understood that the key voters in this election were going to be people of color and white working class voters, like in Western Pennsylvania. Today, Biden went to a union hall in Scranton to vote. He's been in Pennsylvania for the last 48 hours. And at that opening speech, he was in a union hall in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania as well. I want to really say that it's been an impressive campaign by the Biden team in the midst of a pandemic, in the midst of incredible transformation in this country. And it will probably be the last campaign that targets these voters in this way, because our country is changing dramatically. But for this moment, they've gotten it exactly right, with 60% probably emphasis upon white working class in the Midwest and 40% on the diverse, growing younger populations across the Southern America. America's going more like the latter, and Biden is a bridge. So, hey, today, really fortunate not only to be joined by Maggie and Anita, but Charles is on here too. Charles, you know a little bit about Biden. You've watched this. You've also felt this along the way. What are your thoughts?
Well, I think the folks who ran against Biden in the primary said it best, is that the moment met him. And he didn't have to manufacture a persona to run successfully and to accomplish the things that you said you gotta accomplish in order to win, and be successful in politics, period, but in a presidential race. He's had to just be himself. You know, he's the person who's experienced tragedy. He's got decades of experience as a politician. The place that he comes from, the way that he operates as a politician, the way that he talks to voters, the way he interacts with people, the way he stays late and talks to as many people as he can. This is the type of leader that this moment needed. The bridge, the way he stood in support of and didn't demand being in front of Barack Obama, and the way that we know that he will support Kamala and mentor her. That's what this moment needed. That's what our country needed. And he's just being Joe. And we all see that.
Steve, what are your thoughts?
I'm still back in that the speeches we saw in Iowa and then later in South Carolina when Biden spoke. And I really take what Charles said to heart. That's exactly right, Charles. Because even when Biden seemed a little uncertain and of low energy in Iowa, and he hadn't quite crystallized his argument, it was Joe Biden, the guy I knew, was still there, right? The guy from his vice presidency who even was talking about decency and honesty and we need to turn the country around. And I was sort of skeptical that was a winning strategy, in because I was very cynical about what this country had become. But the fact that he stuck with that, and then by the time he got to South Carolina and clearly was energized by the people he met there and the African-American church-going people that he met in some of those churches and some of those other places, galvanized him, and I think clarified. Maybe I'm projecting, but it seemed like it clarified for him his place and his position in the moment.
I think his campaign. Oh, go ahead, Charles.
Well, I was going to say one more thing, and I think it's that. So this is probably who Joe is too. This is like his decades worth of experience being a politician, but it's not just that he stayed the same. It's that he knows when and how to adapt and evolve and bring in other people's views. And that's the that's the shift that he made since the presidential primary that folks like me and maybe you too, Steve, more agreeing with his platform now. His adoption of elements of the Green New Deal, him bringing in a bunch of policy stuff from Warren. This is the savvy move of an experienced politician as well. And that's what this moment needed to bring together the left.
Yeah, I totally agree that he's made some adjustments on the pieces you mentioned. Also, a couple speeches and policy pieces he's announced around support for childcare in this country, working families, and laying out his coronavirus plan. Here's one thing that I believe really is a unique in this modern media moment is that it would have been almost impossible for a candidate who did not have the knownness, the firm image in the public's mind, to have sufficiently introduce themselves to the country in the middle of COVID and in the middle of the Trump onslaught that was occurring. So Biden never needed to introduce himself to the country at this moment. He was already known, and his history as a decent human being and the strength and his compassion has always been there for people. He didn't need to convince people of that. He simply needed to consistently show up and be that person as he's always been. I just don't think that any other candidate would have been able to fully introduce themselves in a way that would have gotten through the Trump maelstrom and the COVID horror. But Biden didn't have to. Biden just needed to show up. And that stability, that I give complete credit to the campaign for understanding that Biden did not need to run a campaign introducing himself, that he needed to run a campaign simply saying, you already know who I am, and this is who I can be and we will be.
That's what he told me.
Yeah, that's right. And his other message was, and you know this guy, he's not an unknown anymore either. He can't hide.
That's right.
You know this guy and what this guy stands for. And that was equally effective.
That's yeah, right. I want to come to you, Charles, to close this with that, with the piece you were going to say. But Steve, he specifically drew that contrast in the last debate. He said, you know me, you know him. You know him, you know me. I deliver this truth, honesty. We will get through this together. I believe in who this country is. This guy over here is a disaster. He lies. He's terrible. And I think that I credit Biden, who does not have a history of staying on message, for being just about the damn most on message campaign I've ever seen at the presidential level. Okay? So Charles, you met Biden in a moment. He told you something, and that was a moment we're never going to forget.
Yeah, he basically said exactly what you're saying, is that he said, this is who I am, this is who I have been, and you know me. And it wasn't like here are my policies. He said I've been fighting this fight for my entire life, and I'm not going to stop, and I've been doing it for folks like you, and I'm going to continue to. This is just who I am. This is how I'm built. You can trust that. My record, my work, everything about him. The guy used to ride a train to and from DC to be with his family. You know, I think they said he was the most underpaid, or he was the poorest senator in history or something like that. Like he's
been the least wealthy out of them all. He started out quite middle, least working wealthy. Class or middle yeah. class. Yep.
Yeah. And the only way you get like that if you're a senator is if you like try hard to just focus on your job and not the perks that come with power. And that's just, I believed him. I remember looking at him and going, holy shit, I believe this guy. I really believe this guy. This is who he is. And that's what he's shown everybody over the course of this election.
Yeah. Yeah. I believe him too. And the moment I believed him. I did believe him. I wanted to believe. But the moment that actually he shut the box, locked it up, and I was like going to believe him forever and ever, was when he chose Kamala Harris as his vice president, okay? When he chose her, because it said to me that he understood that he's a bridge, that he's a bridge. He's a bridge from one era and the first black president to the first female vice president, potentially the first female president, and a black woman and a Southeast Asian woman. When he made that choice, that was a character choice. That was not a policy choice. That was a character choice for me.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. Before we run out of time, is that your last word?
That's the first word for today. You're going to hear me and Charles together on podcast for the next couple of days. In fact, we just might move in together for the next couple of days. All right. Because we got a lot, and we're going to hug each other virtually if we have to, either enjoy or in the sadness, but we're going to get through this together, and we're going to keep working, because that's one thing, that's one of many things that we share, is that Charles and I say, let's do the work.
That's right, and don't stop, and we won't, no matter what happens tonight.
Steve, you've been an anchor through this, man. Thanks for getting up every morning and running this.
I'm just one of the weights you all have cast out in the sea to calm a storm-tossed ship.
Oh man. All right. That's some good words. Let's go. Let's get back to work, folks.